autumnal.
Combinald. Yeah, that was good.
Yeah, cool. Hello, welcome to the final episode of the V2 Academy, this series. I'm Chris Lappin, and join me as ever, I've got Peter Prickett.
Chris.
You well?
Why, thank you very much.
Alright, so shortly we'll be joined by Laurie McGinley, who is currently the under-19s head coach at Cumbernauld Colts. But before that, we're going to discuss, so most clubs are in, either just begun pre-season or about to start pre-season. My memories of pre-season are running up and down hills for hours before we even touch the ball. So,
and this is exactly the sort of thing that makes Twitter and other social media outlets explode.
Yeah.
It's just this time of year, it is absolutely full of people ready to go, to jump on it and say, you dinosaurs running up and down and going on 20K runs, why haven't you got a ball involved? And then the opposite, the other side going, well, we've got to run at some point. It can't all just be with a ball. And people just love to clash over it. Yeah,
but we won a World Cup running.
World Cup by running further than the other teams.
Yeah.
61 years ago.
Yeah.
I think I got that right. Yeah,
61. Is it 61? No. 30 years ahead in 96.
Oh no, 51. Okay. It will be 61 though, by the time hopefully people are still listening to this podcast when it is 61 years. but yeah, it's the shout of dinosaurs.
Yeah.
People are just very keen to express their outrage.
So,
people say they do need to get fit, and it's just a disagreement about how they do it.
Yes, how do you increase players' stamina without making them into a cross-country star?
I have recently started doing some work with a seniors team, and it's an interesting situation because it's a new group of players.
Yeah.
With lots of trialists, and it's a new set of coaches. So everyone's getting to know each other, but at the same time, we still need to try and get fit. So far, it's been lots and lots of small-sided games with high intensity.
Mm.
My suggestion has been that actually, for the time being, maybe a good way to generate the fitness and have football-related movement is through counter-attacking sessions.
Yeah.
So we then have defenders who have to make lots of recovery runs over varying distances, which is a bit more relevant to the game than running up and down a hill might be. It's not my call as to what we do, this is just one of the things that we talk about. But there's lots of people who use what we call disguised running.
Hmm.
So they'll repeat overlaps. You just repeated overlaps after overlaps after overlaps, which is running, but it's with a ball. So there are lots and lots of ways of doing it, but some people might go, you know what, let's cut out the disguise. It is just running. Let's just run. Tony Pulis was renowned for being a big fan of it. I think David Moyes was as well.
Yeah.
But the conundrum of this new group of players is, although they need to get fit, they also need to learn.
They need to learn how to play with each other.
How they're going to play.
Yeah.
How they're going to operate in terms of how they defend. Are they going to defend high? Are they going to defend deep? Are they going to play on the counter? Are they going to look to build up the play? All of this has to be done within the same amount of time. And when you break it down like that, 8 weeks isn't that long. If you've got a session every day, it's plenty of time. If you've got 3 sessions a week, it's probably plenty of time. If you've got 1 session a week and you're trying to do your fitness and your patterns of play and working out who's going to be the first team, who's going to be possibly development squad, across 8 sessions, that's quite difficult.
That's it. I like the idea of playing small sided games as a way of disguising your fitness session.
Well, this is where
I used to hate playing 5-a-side. I prefer to play 11-a-side because I was never fit, mega fit. So.
Well, if you really want to make fit players playing small sided 5-a-side, play man to man.
Yeah.
Play man to man. 20 minutes, 30 minutes, man to man. You're gonna be tired.
Mm.
I hated doing that because I thought it was pointless. I'd always say, just sit in a zone, sit in a diamond, just sit there, make them come to us. We don't need to chase them all over the place. That often fell on deaf ears, so I'd end up following my player into the corner. Like, oh, well, the ball is nowhere near him. He's just dragging me away. But I'll do what you've asked.
And we're delighted to be joined online by Laurie McGinley. How are you doing this evening, Laurie?
I'm doing well, thanks. How are you guys?
Good well too.
Yeah, very well. So how have you been since we last spoke?
Good. Got a new job, working hard. Just keep plodding along and learning and trying to progress as a coach and as a person every day.
Yeah. So for the listeners who didn't listen to our first interview, could you just give us a quick reminder of how you got into coaching?
I was working in university, and then I got my badges quite quickly, and then just enjoyed it so much that I continued it as a kind of hobby. Then got a kind of job working in communities and working with different age groups. And now I've just completed my advanced children's licence in Scotland just last year, and just completing my B licence in February. So just working to hopefully do my A licence in the next two years or so.
So last time we spoke to you, you were with the Community Trust at Motherwell. You had a spell with the ladies' team as well.
The 17s.
Yeah. Well, since then, you've moved on to the Cumbernauld Colts.
Cumbernauld Colts. It's a Scottish thing. Well, it must be great. But yeah, I take the Cumbernauld Colts under 18s.
Yeah. So what's your current role? So
I take the Colts. That'll be easier to say.
Yeah.
I'm head coach of the 18s. I just kind of run the sessions and plan everything. But I've got like a really good support team.
Yeah, so you've moved up an age group. How have you found it challenging moving up?
I found it more challenging because it's the boys are quite they ask a lot more questions, and they ask more kind of specific questions, which is great for me because I can start to answer them. But I find I like this age group because it's you can start to really. Because they're not the polished article, but you need to try and get them to that level where they can get to the 20s and then up to the first team.
Yeah. So is it can players at your age get called into the first team?
Yeah, but it's just pre-season at the moment, so a lot of them are just coming back. We only started back this week, and a lot of them are just getting their fitness up and just get that bond again to try and get the players back into the kind of swing of things.
So you're working with 18s now, 17s before that. Has it always been your aim to work up the age groups?
When I was a younger coach, I used to work with the kind of 8s, 9s, 10s and 11s. But as I kind of progressed, I started to work with the older ones. And because I wanted to complete my B licence and work with the kind of adults, I really wanted to see how the tactical side of the game worked more, and how to work with kind of more young adults to try and make them, like, help them progress as a better person and as a better player.
So it was the aim then to work with adults. It wasn't through the necessity of having to work with older age groups to get your licences. It was because your aim was always to get to the adults.
Yeah, it will be. Hopefully, I'm working, obviously, when I was 16, 17, 18, and potentially, maybe, I don't know what's going to happen in the next couple of years, but just trying to link in with the first team and the 20s to see if I can get more of an understanding how it works at the kind of older age groups.
Okay. Next question coming here. If your aim is to work with adults, thanks for that, Chris. If your aim is to work with the adults, why did you do the children's license?
Because I'd done it as part of when I was working at a club. I worked with a lot of younger children and elite children, so therefore I wanted to work to see what it's like to work at the high level or the high elite end of working with children. And also, it's to help me because the advanced children's license is you can add on things onto it to make it into like or maybe it's aimed at 9 to 12 kind of age group, but you can potentially add into 14s and 15s because it's still you can add in more parts to it.
So there's now the slight irony of you being a highly qualified coach for working in the development stages and with the children, and actually you're probably not going to do it ever again.
Well, I will probably. I like to work. Sometimes you just you need to go. Like I've worked with older ones, younger ones, but you always, you know, I could potentially be asked to work with maybe a 2007 group or 2006, and I'm happy to work with that age group and you know, work on the expertise and trying to progress the player more.
The area that I'm sort of prodding at on here is that it's not just yourself, it's quite common that as coaches become better qualified to work with the younger players, they begin to actually move away from the younger players. So almost a lot of that experience that they have garnered gets wasted, and then somebody else has to come along and pick it up.
Yeah.
Now, you said all along that your aim was to work with adult players. Why was it that you wanted to work with adults and not with the younger ones? I'm not saying that you don't want to work with them, but I'm saying as a preference.
Yeah, playing devil's advocate. I understand. I think it's because I've kind of always wanted to learn as a coach, you know, the tactical side of the game and how the progresses like the first team and the 19s and 20s, and I think I just had a ambition as a very young coach, you know, at 16, 17, 18 you want to be a football manager, but then you realise this might not happen, so you need to work your way up. But again, that's like a dream. A lot of young coaches want to get to the top very, very quickly, but that's you need to really work hard to get there. But you have to work with a variety of different groups to see what your expertise and your skill set is.
Do you think it might be linked in a way with the age of the person when they become a coach?
Potentially, yeah. You could have someone who in their 20s or 30s might want to work with the children and young, like the youth development, but you could have someone who doesn't want to work with that age group. They just want to, you know, it could be a 25-year-old working with the 20s. It just could be something that clicks.
Because when I can only really use myself as an example. I don't really know what's going on in other people's heads. When I became a coach, I became a coach to be a coach and develop players. I didn't become a coach to become a manager.
Yeah.
So the idea of working with older players wasn't necessarily something that was my goal. It's something that has happened because I have tended to be asked to work with older players, and that's not my choice. I will work with whoever I'm asked to work with. But there are certainly some coaches whose personality and attributes are brilliantly matched for working with young players, but their ambition is to work with the older ones.
Yeah, but then you could ask the question then, you know, they could be working with that kind of group and their skill set is excellent, and then they could potentially create that bond, you know, and therefore you could say, I want to work with this group, and then maybe a year later, you know, they're still working with the same group, that kind of thing, and their ambition maybe in 10 years to do that, or 5 years, but that's when you speak to, you know, people like your head of youth or something like that, and therefore you have that discussion, you know, they say, I want to work with maybe one that's 3 years older, or I want to stay with my group, because I want to see how it all kind of pans out in the next 2-3 years.
This is where we start about the phenomena that is very common in these aisles, whereby a coach follows an age all the way through, certainly in grassroots football, rather than having age range specialists.
Yep.
Now, I think there's pluses and minuses to both things there, because you can spend a year learning what works brilliantly for under sevens, and then you have to throw it away and you learn what works brilliantly for under eights, and then you have to throw it away again and learn what works brilliant for under nines, and it's a repeating cycle. Yes. Versus, as you said, the bond, the understanding, the knowledge of the group of players.
Yep.
Questionable which version is for the best.
Well, it depends on what the coach is like. You know, the coach wants to work with that age group and continue to progress. Let's say you say under 7, 8, under 8s, under 9s. You know, there's obviously an age thing, but there's going to be a similarity in some parts. You know what I mean? But the coach will know that because they've been working with them for a couple of years. So therefore, yeah, there's pros and cons to working. But then I think if you have, let's say you're working with an under 11s and 12s, and then under 16s and 17s, you know, there's going to be some similarities in some parts, but you're still going to be working hard to get there. But therefore, you've got a skill set of working with a 5-year gap, and it's not like you're working with under 5s to under 20s. You know, it's still a kind of youth development phase of like 12 to 18, so you're still working with them. Kind of, you just have to broaden your knowledge or your idea, or you're working with your methodology and working on it to try and get the best out of them players.
Yeah, certainly. If you look at clubs overseas, going back to what I said about the qualifications, a lot of them will proclaim, whether it is 100% true or not, is probably, open to debate, that they have their best coaches working with the youngest players.
Yeah, like Holland.
That's where they say they have their best coaches. But we don't. I'm not sure we have any proof that they actually are their best coaches. Maybe their opinion. But again, we have seem to have a culture whereby that is not what happens. We want our best coaches working with the higher numbers, like the bigger age groups, the older player. Whereas, really, I think their philosophy is correct. We do need to have our best coaches working with the younger players. But in order to do that, this progression through the ages doesn't happen.
Yeah, definitely. So you see, like, maybe some ex-pros, you know, who coach, you know, like, let's say, I think it was an example, like Dennis Bergkamp, he took the under-12s for a long time, but then I don't know if it's in Britain or not, but a lot of kind of ex-pros will work with the 20s and the 19s, that kind of thing, because they've actually experienced it, and therefore the 19s might go into the first team, the 20s might go into the first team, so therefore they can pass their knowledge on to the younger boys. But I can understand that a lot of ex-pros and very high-end coaches want to work at the kind of older age groups, but some coaches will want to work with the younger ones just because they think they can, like, for example, let's say a winger, you know, and you're working in an attacking thing, you can work with the younger ones and try and progress that, you know, skill set into them, so therefore they have that knowledge of the ex-pro or a very good coach, but they can really work off them.
That touches the question as to whether the ex-pro is actually the best coach.
That depends. You know, you could have it all depends. It's a 50-50, you know. It really depends on how they are as a coach and how they are as a person and how they deliver information.
That's absolutely correct. Is there, I don't know if either of you would know this, is there a pay gap between coaches working with, like, under-12s and then coaches working under-16s, under-17s?
I really know that. That's the one thing I don't know.
Not that I am aware of. I think that the pay gaps are whether you are a phase leader or head of a section, for example,
okay,
rather than a regular coach.
Yep.
But don't quote me on that.
I think I just, could that come into the ambition part? You get paid more for the older, if you work with older players. But
could do, but then that's I'm not sure of that. Money could be, you know, people just want to do it for the love of the game sometimes.
Certainly, when I was abroad, the coaches for the under 8s to under 10s were virtually volunteers and were allowed to do it on a C license.
Yeah.
But you couldn't touch 11 and above without a B license, and you were paid. But that was abroad.
Yeah.
So we're talking about our culture not valuing working with the youngsters, and yet I've taken a foreign culture who often we look up to, and seemingly the same attitude prevailed there as well.
Mm.
So maybe it's just a human need to feel prestige
Yeah, but I was listening to, so I was reading an article, and it was like Joachim Löw, the German manager, and he was saying, you know, the youth coaches have won us the World Cup, youth coaches won us the European Championships, because they're the ones who progressed them, you know, and then he just obviously very successful, but he uses that quite a lot of how to, he praises the youth coaches, so therefore, you know, that they get the recognition to, you know, for the wins.
Yeah, well, does he come at it from a different perspective, having worked as a youth coach?
Potentially, yeah, probably did. That's the thing, he's like, he wants to try and keep everyone, all the, you know, youth coaches and the managers and all that kind of, also the coaches with him, you know, happy. You know, so it was a team effort, you know.
Yeah, I just wanted to quickly ask, you're back in pre-season?
Yep.
Okay. So before you even kick a ball, do you have a meeting with all the players to get to, like, have your expectations for the season type thing?
Yeah. So we spoke. I spoke to the players about 15-20 minutes before training. You know, just the standards, meeting times, all these kind of things. But I was explaining how we're going to try and play this season through like the system and all that. But I'm going to just drip feed the information to them, because I'm not going to give them lots of information when I can just give them small bits of information throughout the next 3-4 weeks, you know, and then using that information, we can start to use the sub-principles of what we're going to be using.
So in these meetings, does it come up about how you're going to focus on the player development versus winning?
Is that
is there a club philosophy?
I think that age they win, you know, I mean, 18s, you know, but I would say we're going to progress you as a player, but first of all, we're going to progress you as a person first,
yeah.
So we can try and give you the best mentality, you know, because a lot of players turning up, you know, 10-2, 5-2, which is great, because training starts at, say, 6 o'clock, they're turning up at 10-6, you know, like tonight, training started at 6, and players are turning up at 1:15, you know, just getting warmed up, and we were ready to go for, you know, 6 o'clock, so the training session already started, which is just great for me as a coach.
Could it be discussed how the playing time is going to be determined? Or is it based on form, or is it based on trying to develop the player? I'm not sure.
We're just going to try and get the best out of every player.
Mm.
So if you work hard in training and you're progressively getting better, then you're going to get more of a chance of developing more as a player, and therefore you're going to get better and better as a person.
Yeah, we had Gerald Jones on to discuss dealing with parents. When it comes to under-18s, under-19s, that age group, are parents as big a problem as at the younger age groups?
When I'm coaching, I just coach. I'm more concerned about what's going on in the pitch. You know what I mean? Sometimes, I don't know, I've got a very supportive network of parents who help me out, you know, which is great, you know, but again, I leave that kind of to the other guys, you know. I very much believe, the parents ask me questions and I answer them, you know, and try get them on my side, so therefore, you know, when there's things need to be done, you know, we can get their sons, or if you're working with another team, it could be their daughters, you know, and just try and get the best out of the best playing time out of them.
Mm. So, and on your blog, One Foot in the Game, you've done a series of interviews, and you always finish with the same question, so I just wanted to throw that question back at you. So what advice would you give to coaches who are starting off in the game?
Go and read, go and explore, go and try and basically go out there, and if you like it, then you're gonna love the game, because the beautiful game it is.
Yeah.
But my advice is always go, if you love football, go and explore it, go and watch football, go and watch the TV, go to games, get the atmosphere, and if you think you're going to be a coach, go on the level 1, in Scotland is like 1.1, and if you want to, and therefore if you create that, you think you're going to be, like, want to work as a coach, just start your badges, but also try and volunteer as much time as you can, you know, and see how much you can get out of it, because if you don't volunteer, like, I volunteered when I was younger, and I still volunteer, but I think it's all about trying to, you know, work hard and progress as a person, so therefore, always turn up on time, always ask questions, you know, are appropriate, and try and get the best, you know, advice. But also, I think having a mentor and networking is key. You know, as a young coach, try and get a mentor who's there, who knows the game And I always think, try and go and watch different sports, you know, such as like hockey, basketball, these kind of sports, because it's all interlinking skills.
Excellent. Before we finish, do you want to plug your social media?
Yeah, so my Twitter is LaurieMcGinley1, and my LinkedIn is the same, LaurieMcGinley1.
Yep.
If you have any questions, just let me know.
Also, put a link to your blog in the description. I do enjoy reading your interviews, because they're quite short. So.
Yeah. No, that's great. I know, the one foot in the game is because I love One Foot in the Grave.
Yeah.
So I just thought, just have a wee play in that.
Yeah, so I've really enjoyed speaking to you again, Laurie. I'd love to have you on again in the future.
Perfect. Right, thank you.
Okay. Cheers. Oh, I know what I was going to say.
Okay.
But I was once asked by someone for the young players, what do you do in pre-season? Same thing I do during the season.
Yeah.
Don't really work on their fitness because they're kids.
The kids. Actually fit, but usually.
Same thing. You know, generally, as they get older, how should I put it? Adults tend to do the wrong things and put weight on.
Yeah.
Kids, not so much, although I have seen there was a player whose dad was a chef, and he would come back after pre-season weighing a little bit more than he did before.
Yeah. Is there a polite way to approach that, or do you just need to just train that out of them? Or?
That was actually quite difficult.
Is that something you approach with the parents rather than the child?
Now, at the time, it was not my position, luckily, to deal with it, but I believe a conversation was had that the parent wasn't particularly happy with. I don't know the exact details of the conversation, but I know the general topic that was touched upon.
Yeah.
The player, I believe, did leave after about, at the end of that season.
Wow.
So, yeah, tread carefully, to say the least.
So, I'd say it must be even difficult with adults to say, need to lose a couple of kilos. Probably not as hard, but I can't. Especially if it's not, if you're not, it's not professional side. You're just doing it on a Sunday.
And the implication, if you're speaking to a parent about it, is that they're not looking after their child.
Yeah.
In a way, they are overfeeding their child. They're killing them with kindness, spoiling the child. Essentially, These are the sort of things that you're hinting at by saying it. Well, you know, with an adult who generally has control of their own diet.
We like to smoke and drink and eat burgers.
You could stand to be a bit fitter. There's certain things that you can do to help that off you go. Whereas saying to the kid's parent, can you stop feeding them so much? It's not going to go down particularly well.
Hmm. I guess you need to try and make it so it's their idea. People like it when they have their own ideas.
That's true. That is quite true. So I've noticed that he's less mobile than he was before. I'm happy to discuss ideas for things we can do away from training that might help with that. And then if the parent then says, maybe we could give him healthier food, you might get away with it that way.
Yeah.
But it's
you give every parent a nutrition book. Or
that was something that came up later with another group. And at the time I progressed and it was partly my responsibility to deal with it. And actually in the end, we couldn't think of a polite way to have the conversation. So we said, well, we can get hold of some of the, we have a project at the Brentford called Move and Learn, which is about healthy eating. Mm. So I'm sure we can get hold of some of the information from that and maybe give it out to all of the players and just like a little hint there. And in the end, that's what we did.
Yeah.
But, sensitive issue.